We're starting this new series today, and I think it's going to be, it could be, one of the most important series we've done in a while, one of the most challenging, and certainly one of the most practical things we've talked about in a while, and it's simple. It's about how to get along with people when getting along with people is not easy. Getting along with people is hard. We don't often see eye to eye with people. There's people that you can think of immediately, right now, that you just butt heads with, that you just have disagreements pretty consistently with, that you argue with, that you just, things just, there seems like there's always emotions between you and that other person, or there's conflicts, or there's just things that always need to get resolved. And I think conflict with other people is one of those things that happens every single day, right? I mean, how many days do you go without any conflict with anyone else? I mean, can you think of a single day in the past few weeks where you haven't had any conflict whatsoever with anyone else, where everyone else you talk to at work, at home, your roommates, everybody met all of your expectations, and they treated you as kindly and nicely and perfectly, and there was nothing they did that let you down, and there was nothing you did that let them down, and everything was perfect? I mean, how many days do we have like that? Probably none, if you're like me, because conflict is just a reality of life. Like, just having a hard time getting along with other people is just a reality of life. Because here's the deal. Our personalities are very different from other people, right? Your personality is different from other people that you work with, that you live with, they're your friends. You just see things differently than they see things. I like to plan ahead. I like to have everything nice and planned out and plan ahead. And some of you like to be really, really spontaneous. You like to just go with the flow. And that doesn't work very well for me in my world. And sometimes our personalities just don't work out very well. Sometimes we see things differently, or we think about things differently than other people. This happens at work all the time. I mean, you think the way the problem should be solved is very different than the way your coworker thinks it should be solved. You think the best way to sell your product is different than the way they think the best way to sell your product. You think the best way to teach kids is different than the way they think the best way to teach kids. And it just creates tension and conflict because we have very different ideas about how to do things. And then we have different habits, different lifestyle patterns, different ways, and this really happens with roommates, right? Have you ever had those roommates where you kind of have that big discussion about how we're going to keep the house clean and how we're all going to manage that, and then a week later you're like, your definition of clean is a little different than my definition of clean, and it's just things like that that just creates conflict with the people that you live with. Or how about permanent roommates, right? Your spouse, because you can get rid of the other roommates, you know, after the 6-month lease or the year lease runs out, but like, that doesn't really work when you're married to them. I guess it can, but that's not good either. And so we have these permanent roommates, spouses, or kids. You have kids, or maybe you're here today and you're in middle school or high school and parents, and you live with your parents still, and things are just difficult at home sometimes. And partly it's because you spend more time with those people than you spend with everyone else. Like, that's, I mean, just the more time you spend with them, you're probably going to have more conflict. But partly it's because your expectations are a lot higher, right? I mean, these are people you live with and you've lived with and you've known all your life. And so your expectations of how they're going to act and how they're going to treat you and what they're going to do for you and their expectations of you are so much higher that we're always letting each other down. Now, sometimes our conflicts are small. They're like small and silly stuff. I mean, I remember one time I had these three roommates in college, and it was one of those cleanliness things, and we had this agreement about how we were going to wash the dishes, and I remember somebody didn't wash their dishes, and the sink kind of started getting piled up with things, and we still, to this day, don't know who did it, but all of us sort of just, all the other three of us just decided, because it wasn't me, I can tell you that. The other three of us just decided we were going to let it go, and we would let our dishes stack up as well. And so we just kept using them, and we just never even did anything about the dishwasher. It just sat there, and we just let them stack up in the sink to the point where you couldn't move the faucet back anymore because they were like back and forth because they were so tall. And then it got to the point that if you wanted like a bowl of cereal, you had to pull a bowl and a spoon out because we had run out of all dishes. So you had to pull a bowl and a spoon out and go to the bathroom and wash it there so you could have a bowl. And you'd do that, and then you'd just stick it back in the sink. And it's just like we just let it go because none of us was going to give in. It was just the silly conflict. I know you've probably had things like that as well, but then there's the deeper things, right? I mean, there's the more significant. There's like the disagreements that don't just last 5 minutes, they last an hour, and then they last a few hours, and then they last a few days, and then they last weeks and months. And somebody really lets you down. Or a friend stabs you in the back, and there's just this huge falling out, or there's these knockdown, drag out, you know, arguments where you get to the point where it's you almost decide, well, yeah, we shouldn't live together anymore because we just do not get along. Or if that's the way you're going to be, or if that's the way you're going to treat me, then maybe we shouldn't be friends anymore. Or if that's the way it's going to work at work, then maybe I shouldn't work here anymore. Or if this is what it's going to be like every time we have a disagreement or an argument, maybe we just shouldn't be married anymore. And it's those really intense and significant conflicts that all of us have from time to time in our lives. Now, some of us don't like conflict at all. I'm not sure anyone really likes it. Well, we'll get to some of you in a second. But some of us don't like conflict, and so we just avoid it like the plague, like we're scared to death of it. And maybe it's because you think you're right about everything else, but it's a hard time convincing everyone else that you're always right. And so the easiest way is just to not say anything at all and just let it go. Or maybe you're just scared of always hurting someone else's feelings, or you just got this intense desire for everyone else's approval, and so you never want to have conflict with anyone else. And so you just avoid conflict at all costs. You ignore it and you hope that it always will just go away. And a lot of times it does. It actually works. A lot of times it does go away, but you're just one of those people that loves to avoid conflict. Now, the problem with this, there's actually a couple of problems with this. The first is you can't really avoid conflict without destroying yourself in the process. C.S. Lewis said something really profound about this. Look at what he said. He said, "There is no safe investment. To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly be broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even to an animal. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness." He goes on and says, "But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. The alternative to tragedy, or at least to the risk of tragedy, is damnation. And the only place outside of heaven where you can be perfectly safe from all the dangers and perturbations of love is hell." I don't think he's talking literally there. I think what he's saying is, man, you can try to protect your heart from getting hurt. You can try to protect yourself from all the conflict in your life. You can avoid it at all costs. But the truth is, you'll become a person that is so scared of trusting anyone, that's so scared of getting close to anyone, that's so scared of getting hurt that you'll get to a place where you won't even be able to get hurt anymore. You won't have any feelings anymore. You'll become unbreakable, impenetrable. You see, conflict is hard and it's messy and it's difficult, but when you try to avoid it at all costs, you can try to insulate yourself from conflict with other people, but when you insulate yourself, you also isolate yourself. Now, the other problem with avoiding conflict or just hoping that it's going to go away is it doesn't. Because whenever we have conflict with one other person, it leaks its way into every other aspect of our lives. I mean, it doesn't just stay right there. You can't compartmentalize it. I mean, you have a bad day at work and there's somebody that ticks you off there and they don't do something that you, and you just butt heads. And we think we can just get in our cars and drive home and leave it at work, but we don't leave it at work. We always bring it home with us. And you get there and, you know, you kick the dog when you walk in and you're kind of short with everyone. And any little thing that someone does just can set you off and then you go off on them. And it's like, we can't leave one conflict with one person in that relationship and not assume it's not going to leak its way into every other aspect of our lives. When we have conflict at work, we're going to bring it home. When you have little conflicts in your marriage, they're eventually going to build up into something pretty big. When there's one conflict in a community, it can poison the whole community. And then Jesus said that conflict doesn't just leak its way into all your other relationships, it even leaks its way into your relationship with God. That you can't have conflict with other people and think that it has nothing to do with your relationship with God. In fact, one time he said something pretty bold. This comes from the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. We'll put it on the screen. This is what he said. He said, therefore, he was talking about something else, but he says, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, now let's stop there for a second, because in Jewish terms, what that meant is they would go to the temple in Jerusalem, and there was this huge altar there, and they would bring a sacrifice. And so for them, it would be a pigeon, or it would be a calf, or a lamb, or a bull, if they had done something really bad. But they would bring these sacrifices, and it was a way of atoning for their sin. It was a way to come to God, and they would bring the sacrifice to the altar. Or it could be a gift that they were giving to God of all the harvest that they had had. So it was a way of coming to God and saying, God, I'm coming to you to give you this gift, to make sure things are right between me and you, or to worship you, or to pray with you, or to meet with you. And so if we were to translate this in today's terms, Jesus would be saying, hey, therefore, if you come to church and you're there to worship God, or you're there to pray to him, or you're there to learn about him, or you're there to put some money in the plate, if you want to give something to God or you want to meet with him, and it doesn't even have to be at church, it could be at home. If you carve out some time one day and you just want to read the Bible and kind of meet with him and experience him and worship him and pray to him, if you're coming to bring something to God and to make sure your relationship with God is going well and you're growing in it, therefore, he goes on, if you are offering your gift at the altar and you remember there that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. And first, go and be reconciled to them. And then come and offer your gift. So we're sitting at church here. Jeremy's leading the songs, and we're about to sing the song. We're about to sing this song of worship to God, or the plate's coming by. We're about to put some money in the plate. Or about to, you know, there's a prayer time, and in my heart, I'm just silently going to pray to God. I'm about to do that, and then all of a sudden, I remember that there's somebody else in my life. And Jesus says a brother or sister, and he doesn't mean a biological brother or sister. He means maybe somebody else in the community of faith, or maybe somebody close to you that you would consider like a brother or sister, a friend, a roommate, a loved one. And you're sitting there and you're about to sing the song, and you remember there's something between you and them. You did something to them, and there's this conflict, or they did something to you, and there's this conflict. There's still something unresolved and undealt with between you and someone else. He says, actually, I don't want you to start singing yet. I don't want you to put anything in the plate yet. I don't want you to pray yet. I don't want you to meet with me yet. I want you to go and deal with your issue with him or with her first. Because there's almost something more, he didn't want to say there's more important about that, but it's almost like before you can come and you can spend time with me and worship me and bring something to me, I think you need to deal with something between you and your brother or you and your sister first, and then you can come back, and then we'll talk, then we'll get right, then everything will be good, and I'll take your gift and everything will be great. You see, that's really challenging if I'm somebody who likes to avoid conflict. Because if I'm sitting here and I just like to let things slide, there's something that happens in my life with somebody else, and I think, oh, she'll get over it, he'll get over it, it's no big deal, I'll get over it, just give it some time, no big deal. And I'm sitting there and I remember these words of Jesus, and it's like Jesus would look at me and say, hey, I don't really want you to spend time with me until you've dealt with that issue over there first. That's challenging. It's almost in essence Jesus saying, yeah, you can't really ignore conflict. You can't hope it goes away. You can't just avoid it. in your life. Now, that's challenging if you're somebody who avoids conflict or ignores it. But on the other side of the spectrum, there's some of us that relish conflict, right? And there's some of us that just, there's something, maybe you're one of these people, and there's something about conflict that you just enjoy. Like, you like a good argument, because you've gotten good at winning arguments. And like you, and part of it is because you know that 99% of the time you're actually right. And if you just give me enough time talking with the other person, I can convince them that they're wrong and I'm right, and I can win the argument almost all the time. And it's almost like you enjoy argument, and you live and you thrive on conflict, and you'll start creating conflicts out of nothing. I mean, you know people like this, right? People that maybe you work with them, maybe you live with them, don't look around right now, but you know that there's these people, and it's like things can be going great, and they might just make a mountain out of a molehill just to start arguing about something, because it's like they thrive on that. Now, I know you wouldn't admit to being one of those people today, but maybe you just have those tendencies. And maybe if you could ask your friends or your coworkers or your spouse, and they could be honest with you without any fear of retribution, and they could actually look at you and say, yeah, you kind of have those tendencies. You really enjoy conflict. There's something about it. If you have those tendencies, and I'll be honest, I think I tend to have those tendencies. Here's the challenge. Here's the challenge that Jesus speaks to those of us on that side of the section, because what we want more than anything else, and I know this, what we want is to be right. I mean, we feel like most of the time you give me any argument and I'm usually the one that's right. We love to be right. And yet Jesus didn't say, if you remember that there's something between you and a brother, I want you to leave your gift at the altar, and first I want you to go and be right. First I want you to go and confront that person and let them know that they were wrong. First, I want you to go and I want you to win the argument with them and then come back. First, I want you to go and make sure that they get what they deserve. And then come back and bring your gift. You see, if Jesus had said that, that would be awesome, because I've gotten pretty good at being right. I've gotten pretty good at winning arguments. But that's not what he said. He said, first go not and be right, be reconciled. And there's a world of difference between being right and being reconciled. You see, being right is about winning the argument, whereas being reconciled is about winning the relationship. Being right is about getting your way. Being reconciled is about getting along. Being right is about making your case, making sure you're heard. And being reconciled is about making peace with other people. And unfortunately, a lot of us, myself included, are a whole lot more concerned about winning the argument and being right than we are about winning the relationship and being reconciled and making peace. So, what if we changed our paradigm? I mean, what if we took this teaching of Jesus really seriously and we began to see, yeah, conflict is just a part of life. I can't escape it. It happens all the time. It's just life in our world. There's no doing away with conflict. But what if it became so important and so central, such that I thought, you know what? I've got to deal with conflict in my life when it arises, and I've got to deal with it in the right way. I've got to pursue reconciliation with people. I've got to pursue peace with people. I want to make sure there's nothing ever between a brother and sister and me, so that if I'm ever coming before God and I'm praying to him or I'm spending time with him and he ever says, hey, before you spend time with me, is there anything else in your life that's unresolved or undealt with? Because I want you to deal with that first. What if we got to the point where this was so important to us, we had that thought in our mind all the time? I think that's really challenging and really convicting, because on one level there's the small stuff that we deal with in our lives, and maybe we can figure out how to make that work, although those are easy to ignore and those are easy to avoid. You know, you get in a little tiff with a friend, you said something and it hurt her feelings, and it shouldn't have hurt her feelings, and she was too sensitive, and so it's just kind of like one of those things where like she'll get over it and she'll realize like it wasn't a big deal. Like, she was being too sensitive. And you just want to let it go. And yet, what if Jesus is saying, yeah, don't let that go. Yeah, maybe you are right. Maybe she was being too sensitive. It's not about being right. It's about being reconciled. The truth is, you're not reconciled because she's still upset. And she still thinks you said something intentionally to hurt her feelings. And whether it was right or not isn't the point. Go and be reconciled and make peace. And so that's hard enough to think about with the small things in our lives. But what about the big stuff? I mean, what about those big conflicts? What about those big issues that we have with other people? I mean, you might be here today and something comes to mind. And it's something that you would say, you just don't understand. Like, if I told you my story about this person and what's happened between us, if you knew the whole story, if you knew what he did, if you knew what she said last time we talked, like, if you knew that, you would understand that reconciliation isn't even a possibility right now. Like, those words of Jesus, they're nice. I know that's like the goal and the target to shoot for, but it's just not even a possibility with this person right now. It just can't happen. There's no way it could exist. And not to mention, it's just too emotional. I mean, the thought of opening that whole thing back up again and dealing with that thing, I mean, it's too emotional. There's so much wrapped up in what I've said and what she said and what he said and what they've done, and we've tried this before. And I can't even go back to that place anymore. It's too emotional. Or maybe you'd say, and here's the bottom line, she doesn't even deserve reconciliation. I mean, he doesn't deserve it. And if you knew what they did, like if I could come up front and share with everyone what that person did to me, everyone in this room would agree, yeah, you get a pass on the reconciliation thing. That was horrible. She doesn't deserve it. He does not deserve it. You are totally fine not dealing with it, or dealing with it the way you've dealt with it, or giving them the silent treatment, or whatever it is that you've done to help them get what they actually deserve. You see, there's probably a lot of us in here this morning that could share stories like that. But that's not how God treated us. And that's not how he looked at us when we were unreconciled to him. You see, God looks at each one of us and he says, our relationship was broken. I created you. I made you. I made you to be my son, to be my daughter. And then I showed you how to live. I showed you how to thrive. I taught you how to flourish in life and to be all that I made you to be. And you threw all of that away. You shook your fist at me. You were like the prodigal son or the prodigal daughter who said, yeah, dad, thanks, but give me my inheritance. I want to go live life my own way. And you walked right out. And you just rebelled against me. And you keep rebelling against me. And you keep not trusting me in all kinds of ways in your life. And as a result, our relationship is broken. You don't care about me anymore. You don't even think of me as your father anymore. I mean, you might call me that, but you don't actually treat me that way. And I can almost imagine that God up in heaven, when he saw this huge problem and he saw this huge chasm and he saw this broken relationship between us and him, he came up with a plan and he shared it, and the angels looked at him and said, that's not a good plan, God. Because you don't understand, God. This is unreconcilable. They don't even want to be reconciled. They don't care about you. The chasm is so big and so broad, I'm not sure there's anything that can be done to bring them back. Not to mention, God, it's just too emotional. I mean, to think that you're going to send your son down there to live among them and to be one of them and to die for them, that's too emotional. Can you even process that, God? Not to mention, God, they don't deserve it. I mean, what have they ever done to deserve that? I mean, if there's anyone who ever could make a case for somebody not deserving what you're about to give them, and yet you're going to send your son down? And you're going to pursue reconciliation at all costs. You're going to do everything you possibly can. You're going to pave the way. You're going to take all the costs on yourself. You're not going to give them what they deserve. And you're going to take on what they deserve so that you can make peace with them. And God said, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. They don't deserve it. And the thought of my son dying on the cross for them breaks my heart. And there's some people who think it's not even possible. But I'm going to pursue reconciliation at all costs. You see, God never gave up on me. He never gave up on any of us. And he pursues us at all costs to make peace with us. The Apostle Paul explained this really well in some sort of some theological language, but it's really rich. Listen to this one verse from Colossians. He said, "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in Jesus, and through him to reconcile himself, reconcile to himself all things, not just some things, not just the people that he liked, not just the people he thought deserved it, all things." Whether on things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. God went all out to make peace with us, which means how can we do any less as followers of him? Now, let me just say a few things. And share with you kind of where I want to go and where I think we should go over the next 3 weeks with this series and with this idea of making peace. Just three things real quick. Number one, dealing with conflict is hard. It's really hard. It's messy. It's complex. It requires tons of humility. It requires tons of patience. It usually doesn't go very well in the short term. Like, let's be honest. It doesn't. At least it doesn't go well with me. I don't know about you, but when I try to deal with it, it doesn't go very well. I don't know many people who are good at dealing with conflict. And yet, dealing with conflict and addressing it in our lives and trying to make peace is like, it's like making a fine piece of furniture. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of skill. You have to learn how to do it. None of us know how to naturally do it. You have to learn how to do it. You have to have the right tools. You have to work at it for a long, long time. And you mess up and you screw up. And sometimes you screw up so bad that you have to start all over again. But if you keep working and you keep trying and you keep carving away at it, eventually, you can make peace. And so my goal, our goal over the next few weeks is to ask ourselves, how can we become makers of peace? How can we become like makers of fine furniture, artisans, craftsmen, makers of peace? The second thing is this. Dealing with conflict is essential. It's essential. Now, I know some of you are already wishing you hadn't have come today. Like, you're like, oh, great. And I won't be here the next 3 weeks. And you're feeling convicted just like I am because there's probably somebody that's already popped in your mind like, oh yeah, I did not deal with that conflict well and I probably should go do something about it. And you don't want to. And the temptation is going to be to just be like, but no, this doesn't really apply to me and that one can slide and it's going to be okay and I can let it go. But here's the deal. Dealing with conflict, it's essential. We have to do it. Because if we don't, it's like cancer. It will eat away at us. It'll fester. And it'll leak its way and it'll affect everything else we do. It's essential. So essential that Jesus says, look, if you don't want to deal with the conflict that you have that's outstanding between you and other people, then don't bother coming to me. I want to have a relationship with you. I want you to bring your gifts and your worship and your prayers to me. But first, I want you to go and deal with these things. Because you see, loving me and serving me is loving other people and serving other people. And the way you love and serve and worship me, is to love and serve and be reconciled to other people in your life. Number three, third thing, dealing with conflict makes you more like Jesus. Dealing with conflict makes you more like Jesus. Now, maybe you're here today and that wasn't a desire of yours. And you're like, be more like Jesus? I don't know if I want that. Like, and you're just still asking questions about who Jesus was and do I want that and what does that look like? But so if you're there, that's fine. But for those of us who would say, yeah, I do want that. Like, I believe that part of following Jesus is that ultimately I'm going to become more like him. Like, that's the goal. That's the destination. That's what God is doing in my life. He's making me more like Jesus so that I would act and live as Jesus would act and live if he was living my life. And if that's the case, if that's what you believe, then let me be honest. Knowing more theology doesn't really make you more like Jesus. Learning how to pronounce Hebrew and Greek words from the Bible, going to three different Bible studies, doing all these kind of things, it doesn't really make you more like Jesus. Having an amazing worship experience where you love all the songs we sing and you just feel like you connect with God and there's something special and there's this one moment where you close your eyes and something happened in your heart and your soul and you had this magical connection, that's great. That doesn't necessarily make you more like Jesus. And the temptation, we think, is if I just knew more or I could just experience more, that'll make me more like Jesus. But the truth is, what makes us more like Jesus is living like Jesus. It's forgiving people like Jesus forgave people. It's being patient with people like Jesus was patient with people. It's loving and serving people the way Jesus loved and served people. It's pursuing them. It's making peace with them. Because that's ultimately why he came, to make peace with us. There's one more verse I want to read you today. It's this famous verse. It's in the Sermon on the Mount. And oftentimes it's used to talk about people who protest against war and violence and sort of peace on a global or international or national scale, which I'm all for. That's great. I mean, I think the gospel and what Jesus came to do has ramifications in that area and that sphere. But I actually think this one verse, it's found in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount. I think it's actually about this very issue. Because in this whole Sermon on the Mount, Jesus preaches this one sermon one day. The whole time he's talking about forgiving people. He's talking about not getting angry with people. He's talking about not calling them names. He's talking about praying for people who you don't really want to pray for. The whole time he's talking about our relationship with other people and our relationship with God. And in the midst of that, he makes this really simple statement. He says this, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. In other words, you're a follower of Jesus. You're a child of God. You are living most like a child, a daughter, a son of God when you are making peace with other people. When you're going all out to be reconciled, not just to God, but to other people in your life. And so this week, I want you to do two things. The first thing I want you to do is memorize this verse. It's really simple, it's really short, and we're going to give you a little card on the way out. And so you can put the card anywhere you want, you can read it 5 times a day, you can memorize it, but when you walk in next Sunday, there's going to be somebody at the door who's going to quiz you, and they're going to, no, we won't do that. But it's really simple. Blessed are the peacemakers. Say this to yourself all week long. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And then the second thing I want you to do is to ask one question. Just one question. God, is there anybody in my life that I need to be reconciled to? Is there any conflict in my life that has been undealt with? Just ask that question. And you might say, well, then what do I do? I don't know how to reconcile the person. I'm not sure. I'm scared to death to ask that question because then I'll have to do something about it. Well, if you want to wait, we're going to get more practical, and for the next 3 weeks, we're going to talk about some actual instruction that Jesus gave and that others from the Bible gave about how to actually walk through reconciliation in your life. So if you want to wait and just pray for that person for the next week, you can. Or if you want to have the courage to actually do something about it, you can. But just, that's all you got to do is ask one question. God, is there any conflict in my life? Is there somebody in my life? Or maybe there's some bodies. Maybe there's a lot of people. Is there somebody that you're bringing to my mind and heart where there's conflict and I haven't really dealt with it? Or I haven't dealt with it well. And I need to pursue reconciliation. And then would you give me the patience and the mercy and the grace and the strength and the courage to start thinking about what that would mean? Because that's what you did with me. You pursued it with me. And I just want to do what you did for me. Let me pray. Lord God, I pray for these words of Jesus. I pray that you would make all of us peacemakers. And God, we acknowledge that that's really hard. It's maybe one of the hardest things you ask us to do, to love other people the way you love us. And yet you wouldn't have asked us to do that, and you wouldn't have given your Holy Spirit to us to do that if you didn't think we actually could. And so God, I pray that you would help us today, even as you bring to mind maybe people that we're not reconciled to in our lives, people that we've argued with or that we've had conflict or a falling out with, or maybe just people that we like to argue a lot with, that we need to be better about making peace. And then give us the confidence and the courage to trust in you and to be hungry for what you call us to do and to pursue what you call us to do with all we've got. We pray this in your name. Amen.